You did this to me. Lottie yanked her arm from the man's grip, scowling. Hands off, hun, she said, flicking her cigarette butt at his shoes. You want something, you make an appointment like everyone else. The man made no further attempt to touch her, but simply stood there with his shoulders slumped in a damp overcoat that was too big for him. Look at me, he said, almost too quietly for Lottie to hear. She obliged and looked at him. He wasn't familiar, but then she saw a lot of men and couldn't be expected to remember every single one. Besides that, he had a baseball cap tugged down over his eyes and the collar of his coat pulled up over his chin. It was a warm night. He must be sweltering. Lottie glanced up and down the street. Lights were burning in most of the apartment windows around her, but no one appeared to be outside. She considered the man before her. You can come up if you want, she said, reaching into her purse for her keys. But no funny stuff, I've got a gun. She had two of them, actually. A black .38 revolver under the bed upstairs, and the silver .22 she always carried in her handbag. A girl could never be too careful. The man shuffled after her as she made her way up to the third floor of her apartment building. He didn't say anything, but the labored rasps of his breathing made Lottie suspect that he was ill, or at least drastically out of shape. She flicked on all the lights as soon as she opened the door. The apartment was small, but considerably less dreary than some of the other places she'd lived. At least it was clean, with no cracks in the ceiling or unidentifiable stains on the carpet. Sit on the couch over there, she commanded, pointing. She kept her purse close to her side, the weight of the .22 reassuring. I'll make us some coffee. From the bright little kitchenette, she could watch the man as he settled himself, delicately, amid the scattered cushions. He kept his head lowered so that she couldn't get a decent glimpse of his face, but this only made her more determined. She thought she could see part of an ear, and it looked red and strangely misshapen. His hands were covered with leather gloves, which she hadn't noticed before. So, have we met? She asked as the coffee began to percolate. The man gave a short laugh that sounded like a rusty hinge. Yeah, we sure did. He tapped his gloved fingers on his knee, keeping his head down, staring intently into his lap. We sure did. Lottie wondered if this was all an act, if the man was just some psycho trolling for easy victims. He might even have a weapon under that heavy coat. She supposed it had been stupid of her to invite him up, but risk, of course, was a built-in component of her profession. The day she found herself truly afraid of any man was the day she'd have to hang it all up. Just in case, though, she quickly snatched the .22 from her purse and stuffed it in the waistband of her skirt in the back. Then she pulled her blouse down over it and carried the mugs over to the sofa. The man accepted his coffee without comment, leaning forward on the couch with the cup clasped between his hands. Lottie sat in the recliner opposite, where she'd have a clear shot at him if he sprang. What's on your mind? He flicked his gaze up toward her without moving his head. His eyes were shadowed pools. I was here 2 weeks ago, he said, his voice low and rattling with phlegm. You wore the schoolgirl outfit and hit me with the wooden paddle. I told you my name was Sean. Do you remember? Lottie cast her mind back. She thought she could just recall that appointment. Early evening, the guy good-looking but nothing special, with an eagerness that suggested a novice. Lottie had pegged him as a frat boy type, although he'd mentioned that he was married with a baby son. She newly appraised the man sitting before her, having a hard time reconciling his image with her memory of the golden boy from before. She didn't say this, though. Yes, I think I remember you. I look a little different now, don't I? Moving slowly, as though he was a very old man, Sean reached up and dragged the baseball cap from his head. Lottie gasped, then coughed to cover it, not wanting to provoke him. Beneath his hat, Sean had gone completely bald, his head a lumpy mass of red sores. His face was likewise patched with welts and swellings in various shades of crimson and purple, the flesh in the valleys between the welts sloughing off like reptile skin. After he'd given her a good look, he put the hat back on. I won't show you the rest, he said, his eyes seeming to twinkle in the darkness beneath the brim. But I'm sure you can imagine. I'm sure. Lottie set her coffee cup on the floor at her feet, no longer wanting it. She combed her fingers through her curly red hair. And you're showing me this because? I told you, You did it. How could I have? She began, but he waved his hand to silence her. He sipped from his mug, and Lottie's stomach churned. She'd have to throw that cup away now, no telling what germs he was spreading. I haven't been with anyone except my wife and you, Sean explained calmly. The doctors say it's probably sexually transmitted. They don't know exactly what it is, but they do know that much. That, and the fact that it's terminal. Now wait a minute. I've been checked out. I haven't got anything. Maybe you got it some other way. Lottie found herself pressing her body against the back of her chair, as if to get as far away from him as possible. Anyway, she said, even if I did give it to you, what can I do about it now? What do you want from me? He stared at her with his black eyes. Lottie wished she could turn off the overhead light. It bathed him in a sickly yellow glow, making his ruined skin appear a disturbing greenish orange. I just wanted you to know, I guess, he said, and then he coughed, long and loudly, sounding as though he was preparing to bring up a lung. When he had recovered, he took another slug of his coffee. Trying to do my duty for mankind, you know? He laughed, which brought on another fit of coughing. Lottie's heart was thumping. Please don't let him die right here on my sofa, she silently prayed. Sean produced a handkerchief from the pocket of his coat and spat into it, then wiped at his runny eyes. Sorry, he said. I'm afraid I'm not very good company these days. Lottie reached around behind her, surreptitiously, feeling for the gun. Surely he couldn't fake that cough. Surely he was too sick to do too much damage. Well, you've told me now, she said, managing to keep her voice even. I think you should leave. Sean leaned back against the cushions, scratching at his face with his leather gloves. Tiny flakes of skin drifted down into his lap. Hey, I just got here, he said. He reached into his pocket, and Lottie almost screamed, but all he produced was a pack of cigarettes. He held the pack out to her, but she shook her head. He pulled one out of the pack with his lips, then felt around in his coat for a lighter. I quit smoking years ago, he said, lighting up and taking a long drag. But with all this going on, you know, the dying thing, he shrugged. What the hell, I figure. Lottie's hand shook on the gun butt. Was she really going to have to shoot him? And would it matter that much? Judging by the look of him, he wouldn't last the week. I'm really sorry, Sean. Even as she said the words, she knew she didn't really mean them. I wish there was something I could do for you. Well, now that you mention it, there might be. Sean watched her through blue tendrils of smoke. After a long moment, he went for his pocket, very slowly and deliberately this time, his eyes never leaving her face. This is it. He's going to kill me, Lottie thought. And with no more conscious decision on her part, she whipped the .22 out from behind her back and squeezed the trigger four times. The nights were much colder here, but Lottie was used to it by now. The tights she wore were heavy but sheer, her coat short but bulky. She leaned against a frigid lamppost, her breath coming out in white puffs. It had been 3 months since Sean. She had left the apartment that night with nothing but her purse and the clothes on her back. Sean's reptilian body splayed across the old white futon. He hadn't even had any cash on him. A car crept past, and Lottie swung her hips, leaned forward to peer into the window, but then the engine roared and the car squealed off. She made an obscene gesture at the retreating taillights, then resumed her place at the lamppost. Street hooking was really the pits, compared to the relative comfort and safety of her previous gig. Running her own online escort service made her feel like an entrepreneur. Now she was just a common whore and was treated accordingly. The money wasn't bad, but the clientele were certainly a step or two down from what she was used to. Still, though, she had her secret weapon. She smiled to herself, thinking of poor Sean and his hideous malady. He'd done her a favor, in a way, showing her the devastation she carried inside her. Since coming to this new city, she reckoned she had probably condemned a couple of hundred men, perhaps more. Some of them had come back to see her afterwards, and some hadn't. Maybe some hadn't realized where their death sentence had come from. Lottie had felt a pang of conscience when she'd heard through the grapevine that the men were passing the disease on to their wives and mistresses, but it had been only fleeting. No one was blameless, after all, and even though she felt the most contempt for the men who visited her, she also learned to hate the women who allowed them to stray so far from their vows of fidelity. She'd taken to calling herself Typhoid Lottie, if only in her mind. She hadn't been to the hospital herself. Besides the fact that she was still wanted for murder and needed to keep a low profile, She had so far not displayed any symptoms of illness, and so assumed that she was merely a carrier. In her darkest moments, she saw herself as the last great plague upon the earth, holy vengeance upon those who sinned. The idea amused her, but also terrified her with its powerful allure. Another car crawled by, then sped up. She sighed. It was very cold, and there hadn't been much traffic along the road in hours. Even though it wasn't yet 2, she decided to call it a night. She pulled her coat tight around herself and buttoned it up to the neck. When she raised her head, the car was idling there at the curb. She hadn't heard it pull up. Lottie stayed where she was, her fingers still lingering around her throat. It was a nice car, a Mustang, she thought, shiny and obviously new. Its color was an odd minty green that seemed to pulse and change under the streetlights. Frosty air chuffed from the tailpipe. The window on the passenger side glided down, and a man leaned across from the driver's seat. "Hello," he said, smiling. "Cold tonight, isn't it?" "Yes, how very observant of you," Lottie thought, but she returned his smile, tossing her red curls. "Sure is." He was a young man, probably early 30s, lean and handsome. His hair was chestnut and looked as though it had been cut at an expensive salon. He was tan and manicured. Definitely a cut above the guys Lottie usually saw along this strip. She unbuttoned her coat again, slowly, revealing the shimmering black mini dress beneath. "Bet it's warm in that car, though," she purred, strutting closer on her spike heels. "Well, let's see." He pushed the passenger door open and watched her as she climbed in beside him. "That's better, isn't it?" Lottie had to admit the heater blowing on her legs did feel lovely. She closed the Mustang's door with a decisive thunk. "So what's your pleasure, Mr. K., Damon K., and you are?" "Your worst nightmare," Lottie thought with a grin. "Mary," she told him. "All right then, Mary. I thought we'd just take a little drive. Is that all right?" "It's your dime, Damon K." Lottie settled back against the leather seat and watched the city lights rushing past. They had been driving along for nearly 10 minutes before Lottie realized that she didn't recognize any of the scenery. She glanced over at the driver. He was still smiling, his mild, innocuous smile. "I've never seen this part of the city before," she said. The heat was making her feel pleasantly drowsy. "Oh, well, it's like that sometimes, isn't it, when you haven't lived in a place long?" It took a minute or two before his words registered. She looked at him sharply. "How did you know I haven't been here long?" She gripped the door handle, just in case she had to make a break for it. She should have known this guy was too swank for her neighborhood. He was probably a cop. Damon's expression didn't falter. "Hey, take it easy. I just assume that's all, because I haven't seen you around here." He turned his head and looked into her eyes briefly. "And I'm not a cop." Lottie relaxed a little, but kept her hand where it was. Staring out the window again, she could see nothing but the hulking black shapes of buildings, most of them steeped in shadow. The few streetlights she could see were glowing in odd, swirling crimson. Suddenly the warmth from the vents was oppressive, and she squirmed in her heavy jacket. "Where are we going?" she said. "Nowhere in particular," he said. "I really just wanted to talk." The passenger side mirror lit up, and Lottie squinted into it. She thought she could make out a car behind them, following close. It looked flashy, with a red paint job, although that might have been the scarlet haze from the streetlights. Part of her was relieved to see another vehicle, but something about it also made her very uneasy. "Friend of yours?" she asked, trying to keep her voice light. It occurred to her that this guy and the one behind them might be working as a team, taking her out to some remote location to do Christ knew what. Well, if it came to that, she still had her gun. And if they did manage to rape her, they would be the ones who would be sorry. Yes, indeed. Damon glanced into the rearview. "Oh, might be," he said, then laughed. "Don't look so suspicious of everything. I told you all I wanted to do was talk." Lottie was beginning to get annoyed, and she didn't like that there seemed to be no other cars on the road except these two. None of the streets or buildings was familiar either, and the heater was making her sweat. "So talk," she snapped. Damon reached over and turned down the heater. "Better?" he asked. "Yes." "Sorry, I like it really warm. I forget how uncomfortable it is for other people sometimes." Lottie rolled her eyes. "I'm losing my patience, Mr. K. Either say what you have to say or pay me my money and let me out." "All right, all right," Damon said, still grinning. "Goodness, you are all business, aren't you?" He looked into the rearview again, then fixed his gaze back on the road. The problem is, Mary. He glanced at her again. But that isn't really your name, is it? I can see the humor, though. Typhoid Mary. Funny. Lottie's throat dried up. Who the fuck was this guy? Did he know Sean? Maybe he was a cop after all. He didn't look like one, but that didn't mean anything. I don't know what you're talking about, mister, she said, trying to keep her voice from shaking. Right, right. For someone who's all business, you sure are holding up the proceedings. Anyway, I know who you are and what you've done. So let's not play any more games, okay? I'm not going to hurt you, but I don't want any more lies. That clear, Lottie? He wasn't smiling anymore, though he still appeared fairly harmless. Lottie stuck her hand into her purse, felt around for the .22. She didn't pull it out, not yet. You a friend of Sean's? She asked. Sean. Well, I don't know him personally. I know of him, though. Just like I know about all the other men you've been sending over to me lately. And a few women, too. I guess you must have heard about that. The car behind revved its engine, and Damon waved his hand in greeting. Always got my back, that guy, he said, his smile slowly returning. Lottie's hand closed around the gun. Tell me what's going on, she said. The sky through the windshield had started to boil with reddish scudding clouds. Thing is, Lottie, said Damon, navigating the Mustang around a pile of what looked like burning human bodies. Your little escapades have kind of been encroaching on the duties of others, namely me. Don't get me wrong, I like your style and everything, but this plague deal is kind of a one-person job. And if you're the person doing it, well, then where does that leave me, I ask you? The street ahead of them was nearly blocked with corpses, and Damon steered the car up onto the sidewalk to get around them. The roads are really a bitch around here, aren't they? Lottie closed her eyes, the image of the stacked bodies burned into her mind. There had been so many of them, and they were all so white and thin, almost not like human bodies at all. Am I dead? She whispered. No, no, nothing like that. Your time will come, believe me, but it isn't that time yet. Then what? Lottie was still afraid to open her eyes. A rancid smell had started to creep into the car through the heater vents, a smell of blood and pus and rotting flesh, a smell of disease. I've told you, you're encroaching on my territory. You're making me look bad. I just want you to stop. But who are you? Lottie thought of the heat, of the red sky that hung over them. It seemed impossible. Are you the devil? She said. She thought it would sound stupid when she said it out loud, but was horrified to find that it didn't. Devil? Damon laughed. No, not me. He jerked his thumb toward the car behind them. That's the devil, in the car back there, the big boss. I'm flattered, though. The Mustang thumped over something big, and Damon swore. Lottie didn't want to know what it was. Sorry about that, he said. Anyway, as I was saying, you've heard of the Four Horsemen, I presume. Lottie just nodded, unable to speak. Well, you're looking at Horseman number 4, Death, Rider of the Pale Horse, or in my case, the Mint Green Mustang. I'm also known as Pestilence, which should ring a bell. Lottie felt unmoored from her surroundings, as though the heat was pushing her soul out of her body. This all had to be a dream. There was no other explanation. She opened her eyes and looked around. The landscape was now black, featureless, an expanse of blasted soil with nothing growing out of it but oddly twisted rocks that made Lottie think of pictures she'd seen of Mars. The ground was littered with bones, most of them crushed or disarticulated, some deformed beyond recognition. The car's tires crunched blasphemously over them. You're crazy, she managed to rasp. If it makes you feel better to think that, then go right ahead. Damon glanced into his rearview again. The red car was still following closely behind them, matching every bump and shift in speed. Anyway, I told you before that I wasn't going to hurt you, that it wasn't your time to die yet. I mean, it won't be, if we can come to some type of agreement about all this. Agreement? Lottie could see through the windshield the landscape ahead, which seemed to be dissolving into absolute blackness, like that of deepest space. This was more horrifying to her than any of the previous visions had been. Please let him finish talking before we get up there, she prayed. I'll do whatever you want, just take me back, she said. The all-consuming blackness grew closer. Well, that was easy, wasn't it? Damon said cheerfully. I have to tell you, though, I think you're just humoring me because you're scared. I can understand that, but let me just explain a few things to you before we come to any definite conclusions. He slowed the car down slightly, and Lottie nearly sobbed with relief. The car behind them slowed down at the exact same moment. You see, Lottie, I usually keep a pretty close eye on this pestilence thing. To you humans, it must not seem like a big deal. Well, at least to you humans in the West. To you, it probably doesn't seem like your species is being gradually eroded by disease. But I can assure you that it is happening. I just like to take my time, so there's no panic. When there's panic, some human who's smarter than most will come up with a cure that'll wipe out the diseases I've worked so hard inventing. So like I said, slow and steady. His smile was brilliant in the greenish glow from the instrument panel. But then you come along, flying under the radar, so to speak. I know you haven't been to a doctor to discover the specifics of your little internal epidemic, but some of your victims have. And what you're carrying inside of you, Lottie, is like nothing I've ever come up with. And it's like nothing any of us have ever seen. And as far as I could determine, you're the only carrier of it on Earth. Lottie sat perfectly still, her breath growing quick and harsh. Damon glanced over at her. Yeah, I know it's a lot to process. And I also know that you didn't really intend to kill anyone at first, even though Sean's case could be argued against you. But after that, well, he shrugged. You're a murderer many times over, Lottie. Tsk, tsk. Lottie swallowed. Wake up now, she thought, then closed her eyes again. When I open my eyes, I will be back at my apartment and none of this will have happened. She opened her eyes. The darkness was still ahead of them. Damon was still grinning at her in the dim interior of the Mustang. Forgive me for rambling, he said. The crux of the matter is this. You basically have three choices. One, you can agree never to spread the disease to anyone else ever as long as you live. This may seem easy, but keep in mind that if you choose this option, I will be watching you every second of every day. As soon as penis meets vagina, you're dead. Even if you so much as sneeze in another person's direction, you're dead. And not just dead, but dead of the disease that you've given to so many others. And believe me, it isn't pretty. Lottie thought of Sean with his reptile skin coming off in rotted flakes. She shuddered. Two, Damon continued. My associate in the red car can just take you right now. No muss, no fuss. Get things over with right away, you know. You'll be dead just the same as option number one, but there'll be no suffering first. And the devil, despite his reputation, can be relatively merciful with those he likes. And he does like you, Lottie. As if in reply, the red car behind them honked its horn twice in quick succession. Damon laughed. And three, you, Typhoid Lottie, can become my understudy. If I may say so, you certainly have a knack for the job. I can't offer much in the way of benefits, but you'd get to live forever, albeit with me, and not in a particularly pleasant neighborhood. He gestured to the world outside the window. Still, no offense, but you weren't exactly living the high life before. Lottie had to admit that this was true. These are my only options, she said quietly. As it stands, yes, I'm afraid so, Damon replied. But at least you have options, am I right? Most people aren't so lucky. Lottie twisted her hands in her lap. Despite the heat, she now felt terribly cold, all the way down to her bones. This is not happening to me, she thought, but she knew that it was, and there was no point in pretending anymore. She had to make a decision, or one would be made for her. As if he'd read her mind, Damon began humming the Jeopardy theme. I'm giving you exactly 60 seconds, he said. Lottie's brain reeled. Well, option two was definitely out. Suffering or not, she didn't want to go straight to the devil if she could help it. And even the first option, where she ostensibly got to go back to her old life, could she really live the rest of her life that way, with pestilence always breathing down her neck, waiting for her to screw up? And wouldn't she just go to hell when she eventually died anyway? She buried her face in her hands. 5 seconds, Damon sang. Lottie raised her head and stared out through the windshield. She supposed she had better get used to the scenery. The thought made her laugh bitterly. At last she sighed. I choose 3, she said, almost under her breath. She turned to look at him. He was still handsome, supernaturally so. You knew I'd pick that all along, didn't you? Oh, I hoped. I have to admit I was mad at you at first for horning in on my racket, but hey, you seem like someone I could work with. And I suppose even I could use an extra pair of hands now and then. What with the apocalypse imminent and all that. He grinned. So that's your answer? Yes. That's my girl. The car's headlights pierced the darkness, and then they were within it. Lottie leaned on the lamppost, pulling her short coat tight around herself. It was cold, colder than she ever remembered it. She'd had a few clients come by earlier, but in the last hour there'd been no one. It didn't matter much, though. The end was near, but there was no rush. Slow and steady, that was the ticket. She heard the rumble of the engine before she saw the mint-green Mustang roaring up to the curb. Pestilence lowered the window, his teeth glowing white from the driver's seat. "Let's call it an early night. What say, Typhoid?" he said in his booming, jolly voice. "You've done enough for today, and it's damn freezing out there. Hop in, I'll even stop and buy you some hot chocolate." Lottie couldn't help but smile. He wasn't such a bad sort, all things considered. She climbed into the passenger seat, immediately undoing her coat. "It's roasting in here, Pest. Tone it down a shade." Right, I can't have anything my way anymore." He was grinning as he said it. He turned down the heater. "Shall we take the scenic route home?" Lottie pictured the crooked streets, the boiling red skies, the growing stacks of lesion-covered corpses. The future of mankind, she thought to herself, and laughed. "Drive on, Fourth Horseman," she said. "It's up here somewhere. There's graves and everything." Sally grabbed a handful of upholstery as the rickety Vauxhall careened around another hairpin curve. She glanced up at Thomas, who was next to her on the back seat. He was grinning, but even in the darkness she could tell he was a little nervous. "There's all these old headstones." Thomas's Uncle Di was driving, and Sally could see the outline of his face and blonde spiky hair illuminated by the green dashboard lights. She still couldn't get used to seeing the steering wheel on the right side of the car. "I'm not sure how old they are, mind," Di was saying as he maneuvered the vehicle up another narrow mountain road. "But there was some outbreak, see, hundreds of years ago. The Black Death or something. When was that?" Thomas looked at Sally, since she always seemed to know such gruesome things. "Well," she said, painfully aware of her nasal American drawl, "I think there was more than one big plague, but I'm pretty sure the famous Black Death was around the mid-1600s. Di was nodding. "Yeah, that sounds about right. Wait till you see them. You can't actually read the gravestones on account of they're so old and all the writings come off." He turned right at a sign that read Cabin Goli, and Sally felt the car begin to ascend even higher. In a way, she was glad it was dark, so she didn't have to see how high up they were. They had passed no other cars on the remote mountain roads at this time of night. The only light came from the sliver of moon hanging overhead, the street lamps of the villages far below, and the questing headlights of Di's Vauxhall. The road and mountains looked gray and ghostly in their flat glow. "Hey, Di, if you can't find them, it's no big deal. We could come back when it's light if you want." Thomas's voice still held a trace of a Welsh lilt, even though he'd lived in America for more than 10 years. The family had teased him for talking like a Yank, but Sally thought he sounded just the same as when she'd met him. No, they're right round here. Won't be a minute. I'll find them. Then I'll pop you back home. Don't want to go home yet, do you?" "No, of course not." Sally actually did want to go home. The long flight back to Orlando took off tomorrow night, and they hadn't even begun packing. But she liked Di and didn't want to hurt his feelings. Besides, it was only a little past 9, not late at all. Maybe they could even stop for chips on the way back to Thomas's parents' house, where they'd been staying. Sally peered out into the darkness. She had no idea where they were now. Her sense of direction was rotten anyway, and after the seemingly millions of twists, turns, switchbacks, and roundabouts they'd taken, they could have been on Neptune for all she knew. In fact, she thought they might as well be. South Wales certainly looked like an alien landscape compared to wide, flat, balmy Central Florida. "Right along here somewhere," Di was muttering, leaning so far forward that his nose nearly brushed the windscreen. He was a broad and muscular man where Thomas was tall and lithe, loud and gregarious where Thomas was introspective and reserved. Di had brought them on this adventure on a whim after driving over to Ystradmunnach for petrol. Before embarking on this leg of the tour, hoping to locate the possibly fictitious Black Death graves, he'd driven them past a few decrepit old churches and shown them a pub that was supposedly haunted by the spirits of people who had died in accidents on the road in front of it. Sally smiled at the memory. Di was always full of stories, only 10% of which you could actually take seriously. "Well, you can't see them from here." Di was stopping the car, pulling off the road a little way, even though there was no one else around for miles. "But see that little rise there? The graves are just behind that." Sally slid closer to Thomas so she could look out his window. She squinted, and in the indirect glow of the headlights, she thought she could see the suggestion of a low hill. She also saw a slope leading down to a large lake, and a disturbing black edge, like that of a cliff, opposite the lake. Cool. Shame we can't see them in the dark. The relief in Thomas's tone was obvious, as was his attempt to hide it. Like I said, we should come back in the daytime, maybe on our next visit. Yeah, maybe. Di tapped his fingers on the dash for a few beats, clearly mulling something over. Then he gripped the steering wheel in both hands and turned hard into the bumpy terrain just off the shoulder of the road. Sally felt the harsh bump as the tires left the asphalt. I really want you to see him, though, Di said. It ain't far. I think I can make it. Sally and Thomas exchanged glances. The car shuddered and creaked around them, sounding as though every bolt on it was being shaken loose. Sally tried to keep a smile plastered on her face, but the farther they got from the safety of the road, the more difficult it was to do. Thomas reached across the back seat and curled his hand over hers. Just a bit more. Di appeared to be fighting the wheel, though who was winning was anyone's guess. Sally peeked out the window on her side and saw the tires hovering perilously close to that craggy black edge. Her heart thumped and skipped in time with the car's seasick motion. Maybe the slope on this side wasn't even that steep, but in the darkness it was impossible to tell. In the darkness, it looked like a sheer drop. Sally wondered how close they were to the other edge, the one that sloped down into the lake, but she didn't dare ask Thomas to tell her. Looking out this side was bad enough. The little car hewed and teetered. Di was whistling a jaunty tune as he drove. His apparent lack of concern only made Sally more uneasy. He's brought us up here to kill us and bury us where no one will find the bodies. She wasn't sure where the thought had come from, but under these circumstances, in this profound, silent darkness, it seemed possible, even likely. Sure, Di had always seemed like a sweet, popular guy, generous to a fault and a fountain of hilarious anecdotes. But to be fair, she'd only met him a few times on previous visits. Maybe he had a dark side that nobody knew about. Wasn't that always happening on those forensic science shows she watched? He was such a nice man, the neighbors invariably said. We never suspected that he chopped up babies and walled up the pieces in his basement rumpus room. She glanced at Thomas again, and by the grim set of his jaw, she could tell that he was thinking along similar lines. This only heightened her anxiety, since he presumably knew Di a great deal better than she did. Another cautious peek out the window showed the car seesawing toward the abyss for a second, before righting itself in the rocky turf. Sally squeezed her eyes shut, wishing she was anywhere else, even eating black pudding in front of Emmerdale. At last, the car shuddered to a halt at a slight angle, and Di killed the engine. "Look there," he said. Sally opened her eyes slowly and looked out through the grimy windscreen. Floating there in the circle of white light from the headlights was a small cluster of leaning headstones, obviously old, some broken in half, some lying like abandoned corpses in the grass. The sight of them in the cold spotlight, surrounded by darkness and the silent mountains, was undeniably eerie. It was as though they hadn't existed at all until someone had come along and shone a light on them. Sally felt a tingling up and down her arms. "I'll see if I can get a bit closer." Di started the car up again, and the Vauxhall chugged a few more yards forward. The graves grew larger in the headlights, and to Sally they seemed almost defiant in their listing disrepair, these forgotten monuments of human frailty, biding their time in these hidden mountains, rarely seen but ever present. Sally shuddered again, and the feeling was not entirely unpleasant. "I've never been here at night before." Now Di sounded almost as nervous as she and Thomas had felt earlier, and Sally almost laughed out loud. She'd had prosaic concerns about him driving off a mountain, sure, but Di seemed to be afraid of the graves themselves. "You don't believe in ghosts, do you, Di?" Sally had no desire to cruelly poke fun, but she did feel the need to take her small, petty revenge for what he'd put them through with his off-road antics. "I do, I," Di said, without a hint of his usual humor. "I've seen a few myself up in the mountains and that. Frighten the life out of me, they do." He looked back over his shoulder as though searching for the quickest escape route. His face was nothing but a silhouette against the crumbling cemetery spread out before them. "Aren't we going to get out and look?" Sally knew he wanted to leave, but she wasn't finished tormenting him yet. Besides, he was the one who'd driven them all the way up here, wasn't he? "I want to see him up close." "I don't know, Sal. You won't be able to see much. It's awful dark." Sally smiled. "Come on, you're not chicken, are you?" She stole a glance at Thomas, who looked amused but uncertain. "Stay with me on this," she told him silently. If they were going to see the graves, they would all have to go. She didn't trust Di taking off and leaving her alone on this pitch-black mountain with no idea how to get back to the village. "Don't be like that, love." Di still seemed anxious, but in the darkness she thought she could see the twist of a grin on his face. Look, we'll pop over there a second, but don't blame me if one of them Black Death bastards reaches up out of the ground and drags you down to hell, right? Sally grasped the door handle. Don't worry, I can take care of myself. The three of them trudged through the tufts of soft grass, their breath making frosty little clouds in the autumn night's chill. The headlights shone blue-white, cutting a slice out of the darkness, guiding their way to the beckoning stones. Their 6 footfalls seemed to be the only sounds in the universe. The tiny graveyard seemed even sadder and more eerie as they approached it. The stones that still stood were badly weathered, and the ones that had fallen looked like nothing but random bits of broken masonry, with no clue left to reveal their intended purpose. Sally knelt by one reasonably intact marker, lifting the hem of her black skirt to keep it out of the mud. She couldn't read the name carved in the stone, but there was some fairly legible writing there, though it was all in Welsh, a language of which she understood very little. There was, however, a clear death date, 1832. So the graves were plenty old, but not as ancient as Di had thought. And it was unlikely that the people buried here had perished in the Black Death, unless the disease had taken 200 years to travel from London to Tredegar. So what had killed them? The faded etching on another stone gave her the answer. They died of cholera, she said, then immediately wished she hadn't spoken. Her crass American accent seemed a blasphemous cacophony in this quaint little enclave of death. Aye, that's right. Di was whispering, but his voice still seemed to carry an echo over the nearby hills. Black Death, cholera, knew it was something like that. He was standing near the edge of the ragged ring of graves, as if fearful of crossing some imaginary line in the grass. He shifted his weight from one foot to the other. Guess we should be getting back now. Thomas's mother will be wondering where we've got to. Sally had planned on prolonging the torture a bit longer, but suddenly she too wanted to get as far away from here as possible. She scoffed at herself. She didn't believe in ghosts, and graveyards normally didn't bother her, but she was starting to agree with Di. This place was hellish creepy at night. Even the air seemed heavier, hovering over the graves like a noxious gas. She thought again of how the cemetery had seemed to float out of the darkness as soon as the headlights were trained upon it, and she shivered. All right, let's go. She looked around for Thomas, who hadn't spoken a word since they'd got out of the car, then took his hand and began making her way back toward the source of the headlight beam. Even the usually garrulous Di was silent on the mercifully short trek to the leaning Vauxhall. They were all bundled in the car with the doors tightly closed and locked before Di said, "Now, let's see if I can get back to the road," in a voice that seemed fairly confident in its owner's ability to do just that. Sally glanced back at the black edge in the lake, not too thrilled at having to drive between them again, but now eager to get back on the road and back down to the valleys, with its close-packed villages and well-lit pubs. She'd had quite enough of the dark, guardrail-less mountains for one vacation, thank you very much. Di swung the car in a huge arc, for 1 second bringing the graves within a few yards of the window glass. Sally caught sight of a jagged corner, a broken-off arch of stone. She didn't know how it was possible, but the graves looked even creepier without the direct glow of the headlights shining upon them. The shapes of the stones recalled the shapes of hunched and broken bodies, and the illegible carvings seemed like esoteric messages from lost civilizations. In the dark, Sally could almost see the diseased corpses being carried up to this remote little spot, far from the terrified townsfolk below. She could almost hear the creak of the cartwheels under their grisly burden, hear the squelch of the spades in the loamy earth. Who had been given the task of bringing the infectious dead to their hidden resting places? Did these unfortunate pallbearers know they were taking their own lives in their hands as they carried their diseased cargo? The lake yawned black on her side of the car as Di steered back toward the road. The Vauxhall was jumping around like a tin can in a hurricane, and Sally wondered if the suspension would ever be the same again. The road seemed tantalizingly close, a thin black ribbon on the horizon. Suddenly, the little car bounced hard, lifting her an inch off the seat. Di bumped his head on the ceiling. "Hey," Sally began. Di had stomped on the gas. The Vauxhall's tire spun in the dirt for a moment before jumping forward with a grinding roar. Sally hung on for dear life. She spotted Di's eyes in the rearview mirror, huge and terrified. "Shit, shit, shit," he bellowed. He tried to push the gas pedal through the floor. The little car leaped and banged, then skidded and went airborne for 3 heart-stopping seconds. It hit the ground, careering. "Di, stop it! What's the matter with you?" Thomas yelled, gripping the back of the driver's seat with knobby white hands. "Look, for fuck's sake, look!" Di screamed, turning the steering wheel this way and that, pushing forward with his body as though doing so would make the car go faster. Sally and Thomas turned in unison to look out the back window, but the car was jerking and bumping around so much that neither of them could focus on anything. Sally cast a panicked look at her husband. What the hell had Dai seen in the rearview? Don't you see them? Dai's voice was reedy and desperate. He didn't even seem to be looking forward toward the road anymore. His eyes were enormous blue circles in the mirror. The Vauxhall slid in the grass and wobbled toward the steep slope leading down to the lake. Sally gritted her teeth to keep from shrieking. We are going to get out of this, she thought. Cut it out, Dai, she shouted, struggling to be heard over the squealing tires. What kind of sick joke is this? Slow down. They're back there, they're coming. He was hysterical now, babbling himself hoarse. Sally looked over at Thomas and saw that he was plastered against the back seat, his body rigid. His eyes were closed, his lips moved soundlessly. Cut the shit, Dai, do you want to get us killed? She knew it was probably no use trying to reason with him at this point. She slapped him on the arm, but he didn't seem to notice. Jesus, weren't they at the road yet? She didn't remember it being this far. She tried to reach for the steering wheel, but the car hit another bump and she was thrown painfully into the back seat. Reeling, she whipped around and stared hard out the back window again. What the hell was Dai running from? The car shook violently, but she tried to focus on the darkness behind them. What was it? She couldn't see anything. There was nothing at all. But wait. Was there something back there, among the graves? She squinted, trying to hold herself steady. There was something. Several somethings. Milling around the stones. White somethings, almost like human figures. The car tilted sickeningly, but this time, instead of righting itself, it fell into the tilt, and Sally screamed as she tumbled, first to the side and then up onto the ceiling. She felt Thomas's weight falling against her, and she grabbed for him, unable to tell if he was alive or dead, but holding on to him anyway, calling his name through her screams. The headlights winked crazily, casting flickering movie projector shadows over the grass, the sky, the faraway hills, the black surface of the lake that was rushing up to meet them. She began to feel disoriented and faint. A pain shot through her arm and she dimly realized she'd broken it, but she refused to loosen her grip on the unsettlingly limp Thomas, the only familiar thing for her to hang on to. She didn't know where Dai was. She thought she could smell the sharp tang of copper inside the car, blood. They tumbled down and down forever, and then, just as her consciousness was fading, there was a jolt and a thick splash. Sally's eyes shot open. Her entire body howled with agony. She looked out her window. It was dark, and the headlights had evidently gone out, but she could see that the car had come to a stop, thankfully upright but sinking quickly into the tar-black morass of the lake. Realizing she had no idea how deep the water was, Sally immediately began cranking the window down, murmuring thanks to various deities that this car didn't have power windows. She tugged at Thomas's arm and heard him groan. It was the most beautiful sound in the world. Tom. He opened his eyes groggily. She saw a trickle of blood on his face. He had broken his nose. Tom, listen. She could feel the car being sucked under and tried to stifle her panic. The window was down. They would get out. We're in the lake, she told him. His eyes registered a dim comprehension. I'm going out, then I can drag you. I don't think we're far from shore, okay? He stared at her. Dai, he said. She glanced into the driver's seat. Dai was slumped forward over the wheel, not moving. Forget it, he's dead, she said, not knowing that for sure, but past caring at this point. Dai was the one to blame for this, after all. Come on, we're going. The lake had swallowed the tires and was now working its hungry way up the doors, inch by steady inch. Sally squeezed out the open window and stumbled face first into the black water, which was horribly slimy and smelled putrid. Sputtering and gagging, she came to the surface, relieved to see that Thomas had managed to get most of the way out of the window on his own. She grabbed his arm with her one good one and pulled him the rest of the way out, her broken bone shrieking like an alarm bell in her head. The water finally reached the open window and began pouring in, cascades of filthy, stinking brown coating the upholstery. Sally swam a little through the muck, dragging Thomas behind her, trying to get them clear of the suction as the car was pulled under. For a second she paused, wanting to turn back and try to get Dai out, but then with a great bubbling crash, the car tipped forward and seemed to go down all at once, as though the mud beneath had reached up to claim its sacrifice. Sally cried out, sucking in some of the water inadvertently and then hacking it back up. The thought of Dai still alive in there, waking up for a second only to realize what was happening, it was too horrible to think about. No, he was dead, she told herself. Thomas bobbed in the water next to her, dazed but conscious. Jesus, he breathed. He was already dead, there was nothing I could do. She paddled toward the shore, which was farther away than she had anticipated. Images of Dai opening his eyes in that dark, stinking water kept trying to crowd her thoughts, but she forced them away. Are you all right? Thomas splashed after her, half swimming, half sinking, his face a grimace. My nose hurts, and my legs. Are you okay? I think my arm's broken, but other than that, yeah. She strove grimly toward the dim shore. She realized they were pretty far from the nearest village, but she didn't care. As long as she was out of this disgusting lake, she didn't care if they had to walk to Timbuktu. At least they were alive. Her whole body one terrible ache, she finally crawled up onto the grass, panting and puking up the slimy water. Thomas followed a moment later. She lay there next to him for what seemed like hours, looking up at the sliver of moon hovering in the basin of sky above them. The lake water on her skin felt oily and diseased, the thickness of it coating the insides of her nose and mouth. It almost seemed alive, crawling. She turned her head to throw up again. At last, they gathered enough energy to stagger to their feet and begin the long climb up the slope. Sally looked back, but the car was gone. The only hint of disturbance was the intermittent pop of brown bubbles on the otherwise placid surface. Clouds scudded across the moon, temporarily plunging them into an almost complete darkness. Sally looked up, thinking she could barely see a few lights here and there, shining like beacons from the farms scattered around the mountains. The thought of a warm house, a cup of hot tea, a soft chair in front of the fire, and a telephone quickened her pace. The clouds passed, and the sliver of moon shone down again, and the figures were all around them. They ringed the lake, standing at the apex of the slope, staring down with eyes like holes. They were white and very thin. Their clothes were rags. Their faces were like skull faces. Sally stopped and gaped up at them. She felt Thomas's hand grip hers tightly, and she squeezed back. But she wasn't afraid, not of them. She was calm. There were so many more of them than there were headstones. They stood shoulder to shoulder, men and women and children, an unbroken circle all around the lake. Sally wondered what their names had been, wondered if they were sad that the world had forgotten them. They didn't move, and she didn't move, but she felt the oily water on her skin, felt its seething bacteria entering her body, breaching its defenses. For a moment, she thought fondly of Di, and how he had been the lucky one after all. She glanced over at Thomas. His face was very pale in the dim moonlight, as if he were already dead. She knew that he could see them too, that he knew why they were there. She squeezed his hand again. At least they were still together. They walked up the slope hand in hand. Sally and Thomas, the quarantined, the diseased, the infectious. Their limbs were heavy with lake water and pathogens. The ring of ghosts parted for them as they crested the slope and took their places among the dead.